and welcome to Two Peas in a Pod. We're currently living in a time where there's seemingly a lot of negativity on the news and social media, so we're here to show you that that's not the case. We'll find great things happening around the world and to celebrate positive news rather than making it a token piece at the end of a news bulletin. We'll be talking to each other as well as guests and see how they're celebrating positivity. This won't be preachy and it won't be political. Our plan is to be positive and hopefully have a good laugh along the way. His name's Kez.
And his name's Ben.
And welcome to episode 45 of Two Peas in a Pod.
Hey! Crowd goes wild!
The crowd goes wild! How are you, dude?
I'm alright, you?
I'm all good, mate, yeah.
Short and sweet.
And that's it, no.
Ben, thank you for joining us.
So, a simple thing, and this is potentially going to go potentially wrong, but here we go.
Okay.
Diffy go Dewey Happis.
I would say that was pretty good.
Great.
As Welsh goes, and happy St. David's Day to you as well.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. I definitely haven't been practicing that all morning, that's for sure. I was like, I've got, you know, double D, that means th, and it's a soft th, like the. I haven't been looking at three YouTube videos just to kind of clarify that that's definitely how you say it. It's fine.
Are you going to go the whole Welsh hog and have leeks for dinner? Because if not, I'll be disappointed. They're vegan.
They are. universally known as maybe vegan, but now confirmed by Kez today. Leeks are vegan.
I'm an expert. Leek expert. Here.
Resident leek expert. So, mate, how's your week been? Everything good?
It's been week-like. It has been like a week.
Excellent.
Which is the B-side to a Madonna single. But no. No, yeah, it's been all right. I'm currently, I don't know if I said this on the podcast, so I'm doing a degree.
Nice, yeah.
In creative writing. It started now.
Cool, yeah.
I'm at the end of the first section, so it's assignment week, so I've been writing an assignment.
Nice.
It dawned on me that I had to be way more disciplined than I have been. I've been pretty sort of cavalier about the whole thing.
Okay, yeah.
Only this week have I gone, oh, I need to do some work. So,
feeling okay? Feeling good?
Yeah, feeling good. I definitely haven't done it. So I'm relearning how to learn, basically, and I'm also relearning how to write essays.
Yeah,
in a way, I'm doing it with the OU, so it's part time.
Yeah,
and basically just relearning how to write how they want me to write.
Yeah, because it's been a number of years now, isn't it, since you sort of were in that mindset, that practice, I suppose.
Yeah, so, yeah, I left school in 2008 and haven't been in an institute of learning since. So, you know, a good nearly 10 years.
Yeah.
No, over 10 years.
Over 10 years. Nearly, you haven't done maths in a while either.
You haven't done maths. Luckily, I'm doing English. Well over 10 years, but, 13 years since I've learned anything. So, it's currently, I would use the words uphill struggle.
Sure.
But I will slowly get there.
Yeah.
And this is like the first year. So I'm talking a lot about this degree. This is the first year. So it's kind of like, it kind of eases you in gently, like nice. a nice lube.
I'm going to keep that in. Good. smooth and that. Easy. Let's segue out of that. Let's.
How's your week been, Ben?
Dry? No. No, it's been good. It's been really good. I've been particularly excited, purely from a sports point of view. Just because as the dawn of the American football season starts to end, or sort of the sunset, if you will. It's done now till September.
Yep.
It's now baseball season. Bring it on.
Nice.
So super excited about that. Go Blue Jays.
Why the Blue Jays?
So the Toronto Blue Jays, for those who don't know. This is one of those things of, you know, as I'm sure you would find as well, picking a team that you don't necessarily have a particular affiliation with is really, you know, is really difficult, you know, in that sort of way. So the only reason why I have supported them is that every time I've been in North America, a Blue Jays game has seemingly always been on, wherever I've been. Whether I was in New York or in Vancouver or in Seattle, there was just always a Blue Jays game on. So I've sort of been like, okay, well, that's that's cool. And I learned the rules of the game, like, through watching them. And so that's literally the only reason why.
I like that, though, man. I like the idea of picking a team. Like, because, yeah, you're interested in a sport and you want to follow a team.
Yeah.
But you have no affiliation with them, because famously all the teams in the World Series are just in North America.
Yep.
I think it's like this kind of refreshing to think, just pick this team because I just see them a lot.
Yeah.
So do you think you will graduate from watching baseball to watching cricket?
I think basically I need to go with someone who actually has a clue. Do you know what I mean?
Hello there. Hello.
That's where you come in.
That's me.
And yeah, hopefully with the roadmap coming into play and stuff, then we can make that a thing, and and go down there and be like, so what's that doing there? Like, they've hit a ball. What does that mean?
I'd forgotten as well when you said roadmap there. I was like, are we doing a road trip? What are you talking about? We're going to drive. Where are we going? So yes.
So I think, mate, we should get straight into who we're going to be talking to this week. So why don't you have a chat about who we're going to chat to this week?
I'm going to have a chat about who we're going to chat to. Lots of chats. So this week, we chatted to Johnny Garrett, who is the face, the host, one of the brains behind the Craft Beer Channel on YouTube. Anyone who is remotely interested in craft beer or wants to learn about craft beer, bringing that great informative content about the world of craft beer and home brewing and all sorts of stuff that is beer related.
Nice.
And I mean, as a craft beer, I'm going to use the term I describe myself, which is wanky craft beer nerd.
Right.
As one of them, I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation and would have happily carried it on for weeks. And there's so many things that I didn't get to pick Johnny's brain on that. Hopefully when this all sort of, when we can do face-to-face interviews again, I think we will revisit. We'll go and visit Johnny in London. And then
that sounds like a really good idea.
Discuss more at length over a beer like we discussed in the interview. So,
Totally.
But...
yeah, as someone who isn't a craft beer enthusiast, really, enjoy a good craft beer, don't get me wrong, but I have no idea what all the kind of the intricacies are, maybe some of the brewers or the sort of beers that, So
shall we move over to Craft Beer Glossary Corner?
We should, definitely. What we're going to do is we're going to do just a little bit of a key, if you will, where there's a few little things where I had no idea what you were talking about. And in case you're like myself going like, I had no idea what that meant. Here's the key. So when it comes up, you know what we're talking about. So it's going to be quick fire. First up, Kez, dry hopping.
Dry hopping is just the process of adding fresh hops to the beer once you've boiled it, when it's in the fermenter, after it's done its main bit of fermenting.
Lovely. Now, there was a few things that, mentioned there. Maris Otter, Citra and Azucar. What is that?
So these three things are different ingredients that we'd use to make beer. So Maris Otter is a particular type of malt that you would use, mainly used in ales. That's an ale malt that you'd use to give a nice biscuity sort of note to your beer. And Citra and Azucar are two American hops, which are very tropical.
Cool.
And nice. give American beers their distinct hoppy flavour.
Very good. And finally, this should be nice and quick, macro lager.
Macro lager is just mass-produced lager.
Cool. So you're Fosse-y, you Carling-y, sort of, the well-known ones as such.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah.
So other than that, I think, this is... if you're a craft beer lover, you're really going to enjoy this chat and you're going to enjoy the nerd out. If you have no idea what's going on and this is a brand new thing for you, you're going to learn a lot. I know I did. And and you can, use this time to sort of make some notes and try some amazing, brand new craft beers along the way. So I think without further ado, bud, should we get into it?
I've had too many beers. Play the interview, Ben. Play the interview.
Let's go. So, everybody, it's only blooming Johnny from the Craft Beer Channel. Johnny, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
No worries. Now, firstly, I just want to ask, why did you start the Craft Beer Channel?
Oh, well, I mean, why wouldn't you? So, I'll tell the age-old story and then I'll tell you the reason first. But basically, cool. We started the Craft Beer Channel in 2013 because Brad and I were both working for Jamie Oliver, the chef.
Cool. Nice.
And Brad was part of his creative design team, and I was helping to run his website, jamieoliver.com. Mm-hmm. And Jamie started FoodTube, which was his YouTube channel all about food. And he was hoping to make sort of a digital, almost a digital TV channel, all based around food and cooking. And I'd been getting into beer over the last sort of 3 or so years and been watching all the guys who were doing beer reviews on YouTube. And much as I loved those guys and still love many of them, none of them were actually getting outside of their bedrooms, kitchens, garages, and actually going to see everything. Yeah. So I sort of took this opportunity with the, you know, the audience that I knew I could possibly tap into through, you know, working for Jamie, and also the experience that I had in more photography than actual filmmaking, mm-hmm. to try and make sort of some documentary style stuff about beer on YouTube. Nice. So Brad and I took that idea to Jamie, and he was like, yeah, that sounds cool. Cause he's, I wouldn't call him a craft beer geek, but he's always enjoyed stuff like, he drinks lots of Kernel and Camden and just,
oh, cool. Mm-hmm.
And he was like, if the videos are good, then we'll shoot some for FoodTube. And he liked the first few videos. I now look back and hate those videos. So Jamie was clearly being charitable. But he then let us do a couple of videos on FoodTube. And by that point, he had about 500,000 subscribers. So that really got us going. Mm. And then we actually left Jamie Oliver's and left his FoodTube network pretty early on, as me and Brad both took careers elsewhere. But that was sort of how it started, and sort of the inspiration behind it. Although the other inspiration, of course, was free beer, which I think is everybody's when they start. You know, now people don't start vlogs or blogs, they start Instagram accounts, and you can see the breweries getting pissed off at people going, can I have a free beer in return for a post? So it's definitely still the impetus out there.
Yeah, oh, God, sure. Yeah, definitely. This is a question I've always sort of wanted to ask. It's how do you, I say limit, I had to, with my craft beer drinking, I loved it so much, realised that like on a Wednesday, I can't just drink an 8% double IPA. You know, like, is that something you have to like, say midweek, you move on to the table beers and then like Saturdays, Sundays, just like go heavy and drink 10 pints of pulp?
You know, it's really tough because particularly now that I've taken the craft beer channel almost full time. So my time's basically divided between craft beer channel and writing for Good Beer Hunting. I can't sort of plan it that way anymore because sometimes I've got to do shoots on a Monday. Sometimes I've got to do some research for an interview on a Thursday. Sometimes, sometimes I get to the end of the week and I've already had 40 or 50 units of alcohol and I've got to go this weekend. Like I turn to my wife and I go, I'm so sorry, like I can't actually drink with you this weekend. It would be the ruin of me. Yeah. So I try to take 2 days off a week.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I just have no idea what those days are going to be. What I found has really helped actually is we did a video a couple of weeks ago all about dry January. So I did dry January.
Oh, cool.
Oh, okay.
And did a 30-minute documentary sort of supersize me style of me doing that. And realized there is actually some really great low-alcohol beer out there. I mean, there's so much low-alcohol beer out there that most of the stuff you'll find is awful.
Yeah.
You could possibly say the same about craft beer as well.
Yeah.
It's very true, yeah.
Yeah, but if you know what you're looking for, you can find some really nice beers, and that's already helped me in the nearly a month since I did that. Lots of days where I know I need to take a day off, but I wanted to feel like I was having a beer.
Yeah.
I've actually found a couple of breweries that can not give you the buzz, but definitely give you the ritual and the feeling and the flavors.
Yeah. Nice. Did you have like a percentage cutoff, or was it like zero alcohol beers, or like, would you just stay for the low ABVs?
Yeah. I went for anything that was 0.5 or lower.
Oh,
so nice. Anything that is perceived as, or can legally be called low alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's worth noting that like, you know, slightly old orange juice has about 0.5% alcohol in it because fermentation's everywhere. Yeah. So,
wow.
That level of alcohol is really, really minimal.
Johnny, as this is a positivity podcast, we obviously like to focus on what brings people together. Now, as a craft beer lover myself, I've noticed how, you know, the growth in popularity in the UK maybe over the past sort of decade has brought people together. Do you agree?
I mean, 100%. Yes, craft beer. I mean, beer in general has always been... the cliche is like a social glue. I think that's a little bit extreme, but I just think that beer, and in particular the pub, are the places where we go for absolutely everything. It's where we go for like big celebrations. Like I have my wedding in a pub. Mm-hmm. But equally, you just go to the pub for like a thank fuck it's Friday beer, or a we need to have a catch up beer, or we need to commiserate beer, or I'm bored, you want to go to the pub beer. So every time that we think about a social occasion in the UK in particular, and I know it's true of many other nations, you do it in the pub. And, you know, there's always worries that that will change a little bit as people drink less, or as, you know, we've seen the rise of coffee shops and stuff like that. But even then, you know, the rise of coffee shops has not resulted in a similar dip in the amount of people going to the pub. Like, there has been a dip, but it's only been minimal. So still there's this inbuilt thing that when we meet people at least in the pub and probably over a beer. And I don't think there's another thing that really does that. Even cooking, you know, cooking might bring a family together, it might bring some friends together, but not on the same scale that beer ever could.
I agree. And also where I think it brings sort of people together individually, I find, you know, it also brings breweries together and sort of pooling all their knowledge into, you know, from two different breweries across the world, maybe come together and then brew something spectacular. Is that something that, in my sort of experiences, other breweries outside of craft beer don't tend to do that? Is that, I think, part of the, you know, the community and the love, I think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you guys do for a full-time job, but it's a mental thing for two rival companies to come together and show each other exactly their processes, show them all the releases that they have coming out for the next 6 months, to say, we had an issue with this. Did you have an issue with this? And the other person goes, yeah, you just need to buy this thing and you'll never have that issue again. And all these kind of what should be trade secrets are just bandied about over a beer. And it's a super positive thing that craft beer has had, and you started to see it in other industries, whether they're inspired by craft beer or other things. But, you know, ideas are what changed the world, and the idea that we stop sharing those is crazy. All these things that completely changed our society didn't happen by one person going, I've had this idea, I'm going to tell no one. And it's one of these really bad things that capitalism has done, which is to commodify ideas and make it mean that you can't tell anyone anything once you discover this thing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And craft beer, to some extent, has tried to sort of unknit that and try to go, you know what, if we share these ideas across borders and across companies, everybody will benefit as a result. And you know, you see that now in fashion. You know, fashion does collaborations now. You see Vans with their is it Peanuts they teamed up with?
That's right.
And all that kind of stuff. And you just start to see all these little things happening. And I think that craft beer was one of the earlier industries to start doing that, to understand the power of not just sharing ideas, but then also actually sharing IP, intellectual property, going, yeah, stick Snoopy on a t-shirt, please. Like, everybody benefits from that. We don't need to be so kind of protective of it. And a lot of that comes from the fact that craft beer, when it started, had to fight these really big guys that did have those beliefs, that believed that you know, you certainly shouldn't put peanuts on a t-shirt made by Vans. Sure. And it's sort of, craft beer has put diversity over efficiency. And that's sort of the end goal of most of these breweries. Whether it remains that way as things get tougher remains to be seen, and, you know, drinkers and people that understand that need to push for that.
Yeah, totally. And do you think that, I mean, even though they have certainly evolved into this huge global, you know, corporate machine, like BrewDog, basically, do they deserve some credit for how people view craft beer in this country?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'd say is that we talk about BrewDog as a corporate machine. They're still a tiny company, really. If we looked at the scale of BrewDog compared to, like, the obvious example is, go, like, look at AB InBev, and they're just a drop in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Even if you look at, say, look at Sierra Nevada, you know, that's a family-owned brewery. nobody in the UK talks about the scale of that brewery being a problem.
Mm.
But they produce, I think, 7 or 8 times the amount of BrewDog.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. So there's this idea, because they're a British brewery, they're a Scottish brewery.
Yeah.
We think that they're these absolute monsters, and they are. They're giant fish in a pretty small pond. Mm. And I think maybe we're misled by the ambition that they have. They want to be in every corner store all around the world, which makes me a little bit nervous, because I think that that's not championing diversity of business. But they started the craft beer revolution along with Thornbridge. I mean, it was the same guy. Martin Dickey was brewing those beers at Thornbridge, and then he went and founded BrewDog. Yeah. But Thornbridge continued that. Breweries like Kelham Island, who brewed the first, they were the first to win an Great British, the beer of great. What am I talking about? Champion beer of Britain. That's the one.
Yes. Camera Award,
with an American hot beer, and they helped Thornbridge set up. And other breweries like Dark Star, of course, and Mark Tranter is now Burning Sky.
Mm.
Breweries like that all sort of came together within sort of a decade of each other and really changed it. And what BrewDog brought that was different to everybody else was the attitude and this idea of, you know, fiercely independent and all this kind of stuff. It sounds like marketing speak now, but back then it was definitely the truth of it. You know, I drank BrewDog back in 2009, 2010 as a revolutionary act. It was...
Yeah.
Fuck these giant companies that are making beer that I've always hated. I've never loved macro lager. And people always ask me, what's your favorite macro lager? And I go, I hate them all. All of them. Unless we count Pilsner Urquell as a macro lager. That still remains true to me now. I still remember Punk IPA as just not only an amazing beer, and I still think it's a good beer, but as a genuine revolutionary act to drink that stuff. And now... Oh, I don't drink Punk as a revolutionary act whatsoever, but it still gives me that feeling. But, you know, like lots of other people did the same. I remember I interviewed Evan at the Colonel, and he said Punk IPA was the beer that assured him. You know, he tasted those flavors before because he'd been in America, and that's where he got excited about beer. But tasting that in the UK and seeing it have success was part of the justification he had for starting Colonel.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. A moment ago, we touched on collaborations. Talking about different breweries, uniting to make beer. You got to do that yourself with Gypsy Hill, and you made Drifter. How was that experience for you?
Yeah, so, well, Drifter was our second collaboration.
Oh, was it? Oh.
Yeah.
I'm
going to have to blow my own trumpet here. But so that happened in 2016. And it was the first ever New England IPA in the UK.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
So the first hazy IPA ever brewed in the UK was Drifter, as far as we can tell. the caveat to that is that about 2 weeks beforehand, Cloudwater released a double New England IPA. So they went straight for the top. amazingly, so we were part of that brew with Gypsy Hill. But I also unwittingly filmed at Cloudwater the day that they brewed Dipper V3, which was the first New England double IPA. Oh, so wow. We've got, amazingly, these two historical records. Yeah. And I really hope that, you know, if nothing else, if Craft Beer Channel closed tomorrow for whatever reason, we'd still have those two videos. And when beer historians look back in 50 years, they'll be like, hey, there's the... We have everything we need to know about these two beers that started that in the UK. But
you go down in the craft beer Bible in 2000 years as the Jesus of the haze craze, you know.
Well, I mean, I very much think that Paul from Cloudwater will go down as the Jesus of craft beer in the UK.
But, God. some of those beers, I've got to say, I remember the first time I tried one of those beers, and it was, I don't know, 5 years ago. And it blew my brain, like just that. I'd never tasted anything like that before. When Cloudwater was releasing all the seasonal sort of New England style beers, it was insane. But yeah, sorry, go on.
I mean, they've been thought leaders almost since the day they started. Interestingly, of course, we now only remember like the right steps they took. But you know, when they opened, they were going to do. They were going to have seasons, so they'd release like autumn, winter, summer, spring. that's not the order it goes in. Don't know why that came to my head in that order. But, and all this stuff that sort of completely disappeared as they realised that, you know, seasonal brewing is incredibly hard to do. But through that Dipper series, they realised that there are other ways they could, you know, really shake up the market. Mm-hmm. But to go back to the collaborations, I mean, we brewed with Drifter. That was probably the first time we'd done it with a brewery that we really respected. The first one we did was with Brains. We brewed a black IPA with them. One of the really early videos we did, that must have been 2013, our first year. And those collaborations that we've done. So we've done further collaborations with Solvay Society, with Glen Affric, mm-hmm. And a couple of other breweries. That's where I learn the most, because the best way to learn about beer, and this is not to say that you have to be a home brewer to understand beer, but it really does help to understand what goes into a recipe and what goes into the process, more importantly. Because if you just gave a Maris Otter and Citra pale ale recipe to 100 breweries, you get 100 very different beers.
Interesting.
That's down to their process. So everyone talks about the recipes, you know, what hops went into this, what malt did you use, what percentages, whereas really it's when did you add these hops, what equipment did you use to do it, what temperature did you mash in, what's the capacity of your mash tun compared to your lad tun compared to your fermenter, so we can calculate, you know, grams per liter and stuff like this when it gets into the fermenter. So there's what we learned in those collaborations is that you can spend hours on a recipe, but somebody's already written that recipe. That already exists. If we went back and brewed Drifter now, it would taste entirely different to what it did back then, because the ingredients have changed, Gypsy Hill's processes have changed, and tastes have changed. So we'd probably do little tweaks to... I mean, back then, we didn't do any water adjustments for Drifter. We've now learned that water is one of the most important things when it comes to New England IPA to get that pillowy feel.
Pillowy is a great term.
I think in the video we make a joke about me saying pillowy too much. Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, back then when we made that, that wasn't really a word you'd have ever used to describe beer. So how could we have ever brewed a beer that was like that? And we had to learn that through the process. And I think Gypsy Hill still brew Drifter every now and then. Well, I'd imagine it has very little in common flavor wise with what we produced back in 2016.
I can't remember the last time I had it. It was the last Gypsy Hill beer I had was Wader, and that was a couple of years ago. And so I do the odd shift down at our local tap room in Whitstable called the 12 Taps. And I'd done one shift, and then just as I'd finished, like, oh, Kez, we've just tapped this Gypsy Hill beer. I'll give you a pot, you know, as a member of staff, should probably try. And after that, I got that one pint for free, and I must have paid for about 10 more pints, because it was just best. It was honestly no joke. And it was just the best thing. Like one of those nights, I don't know if you've ever worked behind a bar, either of you. Actually, I should know this about you, Ben. But when you finish like an afternoon shift, and then you have a beer, and you have another beer, but before you know it, it's 11 o'clock. And it was one of those nights, it was great. It was just I just love that I could drink New England IPAs until the proverbial cows did come and knock at my door.
is that a euphemism for when people start adding lactose to beer? And then you're like, I'm not interested, actually. Now the cows have come home.
Yeah, the cows. I did. I brewed one. I brewed a New England the other day. I've just put it in bottles. And I was going to make an Imperial Stout at some point or another last year. And I didn't. And I still had a bag of lactose. And it was boiling. And it was just coming to the end. And I was like, do I change? Do I put lactose in this? Because there's a recipe I've done, and I always like to. I would only ever change one thing each time. You know, like I'll brew it exactly the same, but this time, instead of like dry hopping with Citra and Mosaic, I'm going to dry hop it with Azaka or something like that, and or just change little things. But then I was like, I could just put this in. I was like, no, I don't like that. It'll probably ruin it.
I try. I try not to be snobbish, and also because we have like the whole idea of Craft Beer Channel is to always be open-minded is the approach that we have. So, you know, we've tried lots of milkshake IPAs, and we've tried lots of pastry sours and all these styles that, you know, if I'm brutally honest, are mostly appealing to people who don't like beer, mm-hmm. or don't like bitterness, rather. Yeah. And I've really enjoyed some pastry sours. I genuinely have. But I've never had a milkshake IPA that hasn't set my teeth on edge. I don't like the idea of having zero bitterness in a beer. And I don't like the idea of having a bit of bitterness, but also loads and loads of sweetness. Because that's a bit like, you know, if you're in a pub and you have a pint with your main meal, and then you get to pudding and you have a mouthful of your pudding and then a sip of your beer, and you're like, that beer tastes rancid now. Yeah. Like, so bitter. And so that's what you get, just this horrible clash of flavors. So I just can't see a milkshake IPA ever working, whereas like a pastry sour with lactose can, or an imperial stout can really work, because you're heightening that sweetness and adding body. It just seems I think that, so, you know, a lot of brewing is science, but you need that chefy artsy kind of thing as well. And milk sugar and what's essentially like radicchio endive bitterness in there. Like, just makes no sense.
It sounds mental, like, you know, in that whole way of just, you know, as someone who's never crafted any kind of beer myself, or, you know, definitely don't have the palate for it. But, you know, even though it sounds like relatively simple on paper, being like, here's the recipe, go. It sounds like it's almost quite, maybe volatile is the wrong word, but it's there, just the slightest incorrect thing and it could just be game over almost, you know.
It's particularly true of New England IPA. People, I remember when New England IPA became a thing, and people started saying that it was lazy brewing, because it was just, oh, it's just hazy IPA. Like, that's lazy. You don't know how to clarify your beer, or you're not waiting to clarify your beer.
Right. Okay.
But actually, as soon as people started trying to make it, they're like, how the hell do we make this stay hazy?
Right. Right.
My beer just keeps dropping out of suspension. All of these proteins, and that's what happened with Drifter. Like, we had to put on the can, like roll the can.
Oh, really?
Make sure that you didn't have 400 mil of clear beer and then 40 mil of sludge.
Some people might be into that kind of thing. Who knows? Might be into it, you know.
Yeah. And then obviously the oxidation of New England IPA is such a brutal problem.
Right, okay.
It kills me every time. Every time I was like, yeah, I've done it, I've nailed it. No, it's still there.
Yeah, I mean, we did our big New England IPA homebrew video, which is we're sitting at about 50,000 views, so it's quite well viewed. It's not our biggest, but the amount of comments we get from people going, there's just questions about reducing oxidation, and I feel completely unqualified to answer it, because that beer was shelf stable for maybe 2 months. Then I tried it again, and it was caramel colored, and it was oxidized to hell. Like, such a tricky style to get right. And again, it's all process. It's not recipe. There's nothing you can do to avoid that, other than maybe reducing the oats a bit and dry hopping quicker, like straight in the bucket and closing quicker. Like,
I loved your technique in your video. I have no qualifying position to judge, but I was just watching the video, and for anyone, any of our listeners who haven't seen it, Johnny is, so you have a big barrel, essentially big glass bottle full of beer and fermenting beer, and the plan is to use a SodaStream dispenser, CO2 dispenser, attach that to the tap at the bottom, carefully release the CO2 up through the beer, which then creates a cloud of CO2 over the top of the beer, which means that the oxygen in the atmosphere doesn't spoil the beer. And at the same time as doing that, you've got to chuck the hops in as well. And
that's a serious hold your breath moment, it sounds like. Wait for it. You know, easy.
Super terrifying.
Yeah,
super terrifying. Particularly because if you get beer in the CO2 regulator, it's about 50-50 whether you've ruined that CO2 regulator. And they're not cheap. Incidentally, the video that we've got going live tomorrow, which is me brewing a red IPA, in the making of that beer, I did get beer in my CO2 regulator. actor.
Oh, no.
but it survived. Hmm. But I haven't filmed that. Well, I was filming it, but it hasn't gone into the video because that's a whole new thing I didn't want to get into.
Save that one.
But yeah, it went right for the New England IPA, but sadly the second time I did it, it didn't.
Oh, that's a, I do want to take it back to collaborations. What is a collaboration you want to see that hasn't happened?
Ooh.
Even if it's like two breweries at either end of the spectrum or some, you know, something like that, to put you on the spot as well. Sorry, Johnny.
You know, it's really interesting. Like collaborations, we often see people get really excited about collaborations, and even the brewers would admit this. A lot of the time, the actual beer isn't the value in the collaboration. The value in the collaboration is that those breweries get to learn a little something that they do.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And off the back of that, the beer geeks usually get like a very silly beer. It's not necessarily going to be the most delicious beer, but those brewers will have been emailing for months, and then they turn up on the day and they're all drinking while they're brewing, except for the person like doing the heavy lifting, because obviously that would be dangerous. So generally, the actual collaboration beers that I love to enjoy are not the ones where, say, Trillium team up with Cloudwater, because you're like, you're both incredible at making IPAs. But it's not a situation of 1 + 1 = 2.
Sure,
it's not going to be twice
IPA.
As good. Yeah. You're both amazing. It would just be another good IPA. Mm. What I love to see in particular is when breweries who don't really make style of beer team up with a brewery that don't really make that style of beer.
Mm.
So one of my favorite examples of one of my favorite collaboration beers is De Blaugie, which is a Belgian brewery that makes pretty much exclusively saisons that all go into green corked bottles, and they make incredible saisons. But one day, quite a long time ago now, the soon-to-be owner of Hill Farmstead Brewery, Sean Hill, was traveling through Belgium doing his research before he opened Hill Farmstead, and stopped off at the Blaugies and said, "Do you want to do a collaboration?" And they threw a load of Amarillo hops into the saison that this guy was making, and that was the idea of the collaboration.
Yeah,
and you know, that beer, like with saison, you've got these lovely funky spicy esters coming off of the yeast, so you've got like a brioche kind of malt body, and then you've got clove and you've got banana and you've got pear drops and you've got all these other amazing flavors coming off, and then basically you dump a load of bitterness, like bitter orange peel, in with the Amarillo. And it was like nothing De Blaugies would have ever made without him walking into that brewery and doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the stuff I really love to see. And, you know, the thing that also really excites me is the one way that brewers can be unique now. You know, we all use the same hops, we all use the same malts. You know, all this stuff where breweries go, "Hey, we use the finest malts and the finest hops." And you're like, "Yeah, from the same suppliers that everybody else does. You're all buying your hops from Simply Hops, your Kema. And if you're British, you're buying it from Charles Farram and Brookhouse. And then you're buying your malts from Munton's, Fawcett's, Simpson's. You're all using the same stuff." So the place where you can really make a difference is in the yeast. So when I see a brewery say, "We took our house yeast to this brewery," suddenly I'm interested.
Yeah.
Because whether it's a New England yeast or whether it's a funky mixed fermentation style yeast from like Allagash or whatever, then you know you're going to see a clash of culture and a clash of style and a clash of flavors that's going to be really different. So if I had to pick like a brewery who, like some breweries I'd love to see team up, it would be, you know, breweries that I think make exceptional, beautiful, clean beer. Somebody like Don Zocco, who I think makes some of the best lagers in the UK, but he also makes mixed firm beer. Wouldn't it be amazing if Burning Sky said, "Hey, we'll bring some of our wild fermentation, our mixed cultures up, and we'll make something with you"? Or if Allagash came across from the US to Don Zocco or to Burning Sky and said, "Hey, let's use our yeast for this."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where the real uniqueness, like this idea of terroir, comes from. In beer, it's mostly in the yeast, unless you're buying your own individual hops, which you have to be very stupid or very big and able to demand that of your hop supplier to do.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, So for, I suppose from my point of view, it's not, no, I'm not necessarily the most knowledgeable, and there's so much stuff that you've talked about, I'm just like, I have no idea what you're saying. But this is really cool because I'm learning loads. This is good. And with that in mind, like, you know, when it comes to craft beer, you know, like Kez and all of our mates and stuff who are into it are just like, you're getting really into this conversation. I just want in, you know, what's going on there? So basically, like, the ones that I know are obviously like BrewDog and like Signature Brew, because they're the ones that I see like at music festivals most, where I spend like my time. They're always backstage and doing that sort of thing. But I do like beers that are sort of on the sour side, and I didn't even realize that was a thing until about 2 years ago. I'm like, what do you mean sour beer? And had it and just like blew my mind. And this was like, this is nothing like a beer has ever tasted for me. This is brilliant. This is really cool. So with that in mind, have you got any sort of like entry level tips for like widening my palate? And for anyone else listening who just has equally just gone, had no real idea what beer could be, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what we're trying to do with the Craft Beer Channel is trying to take this idea that there's a beer for everybody. You know, there's no alcoholic or non-alcoholic beverage in the world that's as diverse as what you can achieve by brewing with malt, hops, and water. What's one I've missed? Yeast. So what I would say is, if you taste something you really like, ask the question of somebody. If you're in a craft beer bar, the staff would just be delighted. Imagine. Absolutely delighted to guide you and find something similar.
Nice.
So yeah, I'd find stuff that you like and you know, latch onto it. And a lot of people latch onto hops. And to be honest, I think that's a bit of a mistake, because a lot of hops are very, very similar. You know, we all sort of start to claim we can tell the difference between different hops and IPAs and stuff. But when it comes to wine, people are, I don't know the difference between the grapes. I know what I like. And yeah, I kind of feel a little bit the same with the hops. You know, the provenance of the hops is important. And some varieties are really easy to pick out. But, you know, the idea of somebody who's new to beer picking out the difference between Simcoe and Centennial is just laughable. So
yeah, really, no idea what you said.
So really it's saying, you know, if I love the acidity in this, where do I go? And people will love to tell you, but you know, if you're really into beers that have that hint of acidity, then yeah, there's definitely a couple of brewers in the UK that you could look for. People like North Brew, who make their amazing triple fruited Ghosts. Brick Brewery down in South London make the absolute best sours, quick sours, I think, in Europe.
Cool, nice.
So when I say a quick sour, I mean there's no funky yeast going on. It's just literally lactobacillus, which is what you use to make yogurt, going in there and souring it a little bit.
Yeah.
And they just get the balance of flavors and in the additions that they make, like herbs, fruits, spices. So bang on, and never try to amp it up like North do. They make really drinkable, sessionable versions. And then if you like a bit more complexity, then, you know, one of my favorite things to do when I do beer tastings with like corporate clients or just people in bars or at Craft Beer Channel events is give somebody their first ever Creek.
Okay.
Which is a spontaneous, so a wild fermented, so nobody adds yeast. The yeast is all natural. It comes in the air, in the barrels and stuff. So it's like just leaving a beer to go off. So it's really funky, really complex, really weird. They blend it to round out all of those flavors. So it's a beautiful, refreshing, funky drink. And then they add a ton of sour cherries to it and macerate it for a couple of months. And you end up with, like, the really good ones taste like Bakewell tart.
Nice.
Liquefied. And it's after Pilsner, it's my favorite style of beer. I just can't get enough of Belgian Creeks. That's where I go. If anybody likes acidity, cherry lambics are the way to go, Creeks.
I was going to say, you also mentioned about the going with dry January stuff and the low alcohol ones. Is there any, because I'm sort of a little bit partial into that sort of thing sometimes as well. There's so many moments where I'm like, I'm the designated driver, so therefore, do you know what I mean? Like, so is there any of those that you try that you really enjoyed specifically along that journey?
Yeah, so at the end of that video, we picked Northern Monk. They have a core beer called Faith, which is an all citra New England IPA. They've got a 0.5% alcohol version called Holy Faith. That's a banger. If you're a lager lover, Germany make the best low alcohol lagers in the world. Not Beck's. Mm-hmm. Beck's Blue is awful.
Yeah,
tastes like pizza. Pizza.
You heard it here first.
If you go to
goes great with Domino's. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. That might be quite a good match. But there's a brewery called Rot House. It's actually a government-owned brewery, weirdly enough, from the Black Forest in Germany, and they're relatively widely available in the UK in good pubs and good bottle shops, but their low alcohol Pilsner is amazing. Cool. Like, I would, as a beer judge, a table captain at SIBA beer judging would struggle to pick that out from a lineup of full strength Pilsners.
Right. Wow. Interesting.
It's a really good beer.
Right. Cool. It's good. I'm making so many notes right now. This is great.
Yeah, it's good to see you typing away.
I'd like to know how you're spelling the beer. It's Tannenzapfel. It's the name of the beer. So good luck with that.
I think Google just autocorrected me. Did you mean this? Yeah, probably.
Johnny, I'm going to ask you the million-dollar question. It was going to come at some point. What's your favourite beer?
So I get $1 million when I tell you. Is
that... I got a write in a check.
Yeah, that definitely won't bounce. Yeah.
Favorite beer or favorite brewery? I missed.
Both. Go for both.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for me, the question of what's your favorite beer, it would be the beer that. Well, there's two questions. It's one, like, what is the beer that you think is the best beer, and one is the which beer is the one that you drink if you could only drink one more beer for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
and the beer that I would drink for the rest of my life if I could is called The Standard. It's by a brewery called Notch. So it's a Bohemian Pilsner. It's basically Pilsner Urquell.
Yeah,
but it's made by a small independent brewery in Boston, just outside of Boston, Salem, technically, where the witch trials happened. It's one of my favorite beers in the world. It's the most drinkable thing. It's made by beautiful, wonderful, passionate people. And if you go to the tap room, it's a wonderful place to be, which is why it wins over Pilsner Urquell, which is just as good, but macro. And it just doesn't have that story for me. So yeah. That's the beer. If I could have that fresh, I'd drink that every day instead of everything else. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about favorite brewery, then it'd probably be Russian River. Yeah. My time over there was amazing. It's all... We did these videos recently on Craft Beer Channel. We asked what the best beers are, and a lot of it was tied to emotional memory.
Yeah.
Rather than like the actual quality of the beers. But for me, Russian River, they make Pliny the Elder, one of the best West Coast IPAs in the world. They make Blind Pig, again, one of the best West Coast IPAs in the world.
Yeah.
They make fantastic... pale ales, fantastic lagers, fantastic mixed firm and Belgian beers. But also, if you go to the brew pub and you sit there and you have a pepperoni pizza, and it just feels like a brew pub from like the early 2000s. It doesn't feel like this really geeky, insular, slightly exclusive world of craft beer. It just feels like a great brew pub. And that's what me and Brad absolutely loved it. On a Sunday, it's $4 for a pint of Pliny. $4 for a pint of 8% beer that people are paying $50 just for the shipping to get.
Wow.
And this is regarded pretty, I would say, I mean, from what I've read and heard, this is regarded as the best beer of that style in the world, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's super hyped as that, and has been almost since it was released in about 1997.
Yeah.
You know, what I would say is there is beer made in this country as West Coast IPAs made in this country as good as Pliny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. But what you don't get is you don't get it for $4 on a Sunday with a pepperoni pizza in a beautiful brew pub.
Sure.
You pay, unfortunately in the UK, because of the tax and because it's so small batch for most of our brewers, it's £7 or £8. It's only released once a year, and you're probably going to have to drink it at home on your own.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
it's such a different experience, and that's what I love about American beer culture over British beer culture, in that both the government is set up to make these kind of beers normal, and the culture is there to make these beers a little bit normal. And I mean, the Russian River Brew Pub is this wonderful distillation of craft beer culture, because you've got these people who have traveled from the other side of the world, and they queue up outside, myself included, queue up outside for like an hour or two, and they'll go in and they'll sit there for like an hour, have two or three Plinies, tick that on their bucket list and leave.
Yeah, right.
And then you've got these amazing people just sat at the bar who go there every Sunday for happy hour, who have a pepperoni pizza. There's a famous guy there who builds bar mat towers every Sunday. Always there.
Yes.
Love that.
And just drinks a couple of Plinies and has a nice meal and watch the NFL game. And they have their own separate entrance as well, because, you know, Russian River recognizes that if you're a local who's been there since the start before it all exploded, you're not going to queue.
Sure, yeah.
Want to queue, and you shouldn't have to queue.
That's cool.
So they have a back door. They have a back door with a bouncer. I don't know. Does he like check your driving license on the way? Like, yeah, you're a local.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what's a zip code?
And then you have the other entrance that everyone else goes through, who's generally goes in, has two or three pints, orders like a case of beer to leave, and then puts that on a plane and spends the rest of the plane ride like, oh my god, is the beer okay? Every bit of turbulence, it's not am I going to die, it's is the Pliny okay?
Yeah.
Amazing. I think that's a really really good point, I think, to end on there, Johnny. Just before we go, can you tell our listeners where they can find you? Not you specifically, just all your great content.
Yeah. It's my address, yeah.
Digitally, where can they find you?
Yeah, so the Craft Beer Channel's on YouTube, youtube.com/craftbeerchannel. We're also on Twitter at Beer Channel, Instagram at Craft Beer Channel. And me personally, I'm at Johnny Garrett on Twitter.
Nice.
And keep it up, because you're doing great stuff.
Thank you.
Johnny, thank you so much for joining. It's been great fun. And yeah, I could honestly continue this conversation for another 2 hours. So.
Not at all. Thanks for having me, guys.
No, thanks, mate. Awesome. Hey, guys. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at 2ppodcast and facebook.com/2ppod.
You can also visit the website, which is www.2ppodcast.com, and you can email us, hello@2ppodcast.com.
Get in touch with us, send in your questions, send in your comments, we'd love to hear from you. Right, back to the show. So, guys, I definitely have learned a lot from that interview with Johnny, and as you said before we started, you could have probably talked for Talk more than
J.R. Tolkien.
I was going to say, he wrote Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah,
I think you guys could have talked for ages, couldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah. And would absolutely love to do it again over beer this time.
In real life. Yeah. In some sort of brewery somewhere, some like craft lagery, you know, just like handheld recorder with a beer in hand. And, you know, actually that'd be really cool, is if we could go like, cool, let's meet up, we'll do a podcast episode, and I could try like random beers as per his recommendation. And obviously, like, that would be wicked. That'd be really cool.
Yes, let's do it. And also, I think I've said this to every single one of our guests, we would absolutely revisit each guest when we can meet them in person. For the ones we haven't met in person as well. And the ones we already know. But
definitely.
That was good and made me very thirsty for beer. So immediately after that episode, I went and drunk 10 pints.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't really.
No, it was 12. Nice. So, I think, should we get into some good news there, bud?
It's time for good news.
Nice. It's good, mate. There's a little trill in there. Like, it was nice, you know, getting really fancy.
The rhythm is all the melody is, it's changed a little bit over the years.
In my head, you've got like your finger in your ear doing a bit of a Britney kind of like, you know, really getting into the moment, you know. Time for good news. So, like, you're getting all. Yeah,
you can auto-tune that one as well if you want.
No, mate, I never do. No, you are. As I said, consistent. You are the most consistent good news singer that I've that I've ever come across, and maybe the only one.
In your face, Lady Gaga.
So, I think why don't we start with you, mate? What have you got for us this week?
Pumtastic, mate. It's pumtastic.
Excellent. Go for it.
I love a pun, and this is
right up my street. And if the listener likes a pun, it'll be out their street too. this cast your mind back about 2 weeks when the sun was nowhere to be seen and we had this awful white stuff that fell from the sky and it was really cold. really odd weather that I've never seen before, apparently. Yep. No, a competition ran in Scotland. It went to the public to name over 50 snowplows, and some of these puns are just amazing.
Right,
so essentially, this is just the public was given the task of naming some snowplows in Scotland, arranged by the company Amy, who manage a lot of the public highways and bridges in southern Scotland. So here we go. So I'll count down from 10 to 1.
Here we go, top of the star.
Yes. So in at number 10, Salt Disney.
Nice.
Number 9 is Mary, Queen of Salt.
Nice.
And unmoved at number 8 is Spready Van Halen. Up 5 places is number 7, Carrie Bradshaw.
Nice.
Number 6 is Lord Coldemort. Number 5 is Sled Zeppelin.
Very good.
Number 4, I think this is my favourite, is Spready Mercury.
Very good.
And number 3 took me a second to read. But number 3 is Brinestone Plowboy.
Nice.
Number 2, William Wallace.
Oh, very good, very good.
Yeah, it's a good one. Now, number 1, I think, is my favourite for... Well, I think is number 1 for many reasons. Yep. But number 1, you're a blizzard, Harry.
Very good. That's very, really, really cool. That is brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised it wasn't like Spready McSpreadface or something, but...
They did reference Boaty McBoatface, but I think they've frozen out a few of the...
no pun intended. Ones. Yeah, very good. I like it.
But yes, yeah, no. So that is my uplifting snow-based pun good news. That's which brilliant. Is a new section that we'll have on every snow year.
Nice. Wicked.
What's your good news, dude?
So we've got a little bit of a summary and then one more sort of in more depth good news.
Is that way of your way of saying you've got like 3 stories?
I've got like a few stories that are like kind of headlines and one that's more in depth. So
I'm glad you come prepared and like really, you know, hit home with the good news, man.
That's good. Keeping it on brand.
came armed with good news this week.
So do you remember your story of conservation conversation?
Which one? There was loads of them.
There are, well, I was hoping you'd do the jingle, but
oh, I see. Oh. I thought you were asking me specifically.
No. And pause for the thing that you've done every time, and go.
Conservation conversation.
Cool. The European bison being introduced back into Kent. Do you remember that one?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. I do remember this. Yeah.
So Europe's largest land mammal, the European bison, is no longer a vulnerable species after long-term conservation effort by the WWF. So, nice. Yeah. So over the, you know, the continent, it's, it's slowly but surely being introduced and no longer vulnerable. So that's really brilliant. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's great news. I like that.
Next up, we've got the future of seafood. Vienna's Revo Foods is unveiling the world's first 3D printed plant-based smoked salmon, which is really weird to think that it's 3D.
That's a sentence I never thought I would say.
I mean, it's the headline that just keeps on giving, but it's
so
obviously they're using like plant-based stuff to kind of, you know, rather than like plastic. But
yeah, well,
I'm looking at the picture of it now, it really looks the part, you know, and somehow in its printing process is able to, I guess, you know, add all the right texture and all the right, you know, taste, I suppose. It somehow makes it a thing. But yeah, potentially the future of food, you know, we can just 3D print it. And yeah, how amazing would that be for so many?
I set
reasons.
My 3D printer to print me a hamburger.
and a 3-course meal.
So, nice. Yeah, so that's good.
So that's really cool.
As long as it's sustainable, because that's the thing.
Exactly that.
It might be 3D printed. It might be plant-based, but is it sustainable?
Absolutely.
And stuff.
Yes, and stuff. And finally, the main bit of good news that I found, which I thought was just quite an interesting one, is that Christians, Muslims and Jews to share a faith centre in Berlin. So a €47 million building will feature a church, a mosque and a synagogue, all linked to a central meeting space. So it's on the site of a church torn down by East Germany's communist rulers. A new place of worship is set to rise that will bring Christians, Jews and Muslims under one roof, and it has already been dubbed a Chermoskagog. It's quite a mouthful. But the idea being that over time, once it's been built, is that it's going to be just a communal space which will incorporate church, mosque and synagogue, and people of, you know, other faiths and denominations and those of no faith even will be able to come to events and discussions in the large hall. The idea is pretty simple. This is from Roland Stolt, a Christian theologian who helped start the project. We wanted to build a house of prayer and learning where all three religions could coexist while retaining their own identity. And yeah, they go on to say there are many different ways to God, and each is a good way. And it's more of a sort of symbol, and it's the start of a new era where we show there is no hate between us. So it's sort of like this coming together of stuff, and it's sort of, yeah, a real building of community within the sort of the universal kind of, you know, coming together of, you know, praying and praising God. But yeah, I think it's just a really interesting project. Like, in a weird way, when I was looking at this, I was thinking, like, why hasn't this happened earlier, in a weird way? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's such a...
I mean, we don't know that it hasn't. And I'm pretty confident in saying that while this is, like, this isn't the first time that this has happened, like, that, you know, different faiths have come together,
yeah,
like this. But it's certainly an incredible project. And, yeah, like, I think it's... Yeah, I think, you know, it's such a... I think people forget about what religion means to a lot of people. I think,
yeah,
21st century has become a bit divisive, and I think we can still take the positives from that, and, you know, from that community. And I think that's, yeah, that's fantastic that they've all come together.
Yeah.
And, you know, managed to do that. Created, yeah, essentially a one-stop shop.
Yeah, essentially that, yeah. I think it's, yeah, yeah, like I say, it could be really, really interesting and very, very positive. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
An amazing place, yeah, to visit. The House of One in Berlin. When that eventually gets built. So, if you've really enjoyed this chat and you want to learn more about craft beer and everything that comes with it, because as it turns out, there's a lot that's going on. Like a lot. You can check out Johnny at the Craft Beer Channel, which is youtube.com/thecraftbeerchannel. You can also find them on Twitter, twitter.com/beerchannel. And you can also find Johnny on his Instagram as well, Johnny Garrett. If you want to support them on their Patreon, it is patreon.com/craftbeerchannel. Yeah, and so go and check them out. Absolutely implore you to do so. Their content is massive. So, yeah, there's so much more that you can learn, and I'll definitely be doing the same thing. As I'm sure Kez has viewed all their videos more than once.
there is a couple I've viewed a few times.
There we go. Nice. Now, if you want to get in touch with us, it's really, really simple. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at 2ppodcast and facebook.com/2ppod.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, and you can also get
back in
touch with us via the... You can also get in touch with us via the website, which is www.2ppodcast.com, or you can get in touch with us via email, and that's hello@2ppodcast.com.
Did I leave the stove on? Oh, hello. So please get in touch. We'd love to hear all your messages, and if you really enjoy the show, leave us a review. It really helps us out to reach as many people as possible, as we can help spread that sweet positivity.
And if you don't have time to leave a review, just remember to tell a friend. Because word of mouth is the new...
Is currently trending on Twitter.
It's the new trending hashtag. Hashtag word of mouth.
There we go. So thank you so much for listening, everybody. Peace and love. We've been 2 P's in the pod. He's been Kez P.
And he's been Ben P.
And we'll see you next time, everybody. Bye!
Bye!